Very Gladys was in Vietnam during the summer of 1966. He bought a tape recorder and 22 rolls of tape and began sending tapes to me, Francis. And I'm transcribing them on this tape for posterity. I begin here with the first tape.
Well, this is a test. Yeah, this recorder is working. Okay, we'll start recording right now. Dear everybody, whomever this may concern. Well, as I said in my letter, I got this tape recorder for a few bucks. I decided to make a few tapes before I got in the field tomorrow. I think I'll give you a blow-by-blow description of leaving San Francisco. By the way, Mom, I didn't really leave that night when you left me. The flight was supposed to be for 5 o'clock, but it was postponed, so they took us to a Oakland hotel. And there we slept till about 11 o'clock, and we got up again, ate, and we furnished all this stuff, and we took off in a commercial jet from Oakland airport, and we went out to, started on our journey. Our first stop was Honolulu, where I think I wrote you a card. I don't know. I either did it there in Manila. And the second stop, Wake Island, which you wouldn't really believe. It's so damn small. I had great doubts whether this great commercial jet, four-jet type aircraft that we were flying wouldn't make it on this wonderful little island. And the third stop was Clark Air Force Base in the Philippines. We couldn't tell much from there. It was just raining in the middle of the night. But then we landed in Saigon. And this is really something, because it was about 3 o'clock in the morning. It was raining and drizzling and wet and very eerie looking. And it was really something. It put a creepy feeling in you. Everybody was kind of wondering about it. And we got there at 3 o'clock in the morning, and after a couple hours, we finally got settled, and they put us in Camp Alpha. And we didn't find out until 12 o'clock the next day where exactly we'd be going to. And this naturally was the first cab. From the first cab, we stayed 3 days in Saigon. First day of which I went through Saigon, looked at all the good sights. And I was real perturbed because my camera went on the blink at that time. Really still hasn't been fixed, and I'm going to try to work on it tonight with able-bodied assistance of some of my friends. The second day I spent at a Navy pool. And this was kind of interesting. It was in a pool, it looked like a resort pool. Evidently the French had built it when they were there. And we spent the entire day there, swimming around at night. And the third day we spent at the officers' club of Air Force Base, Tansanute. Then we finally got on the way to the first cab. And once we got here, I found out exactly where my assignment would be. And as it would be, it turned out to be the 229th Helicopter Assault Battalion. And this is that's a C-124 taking off in the background. We're not far from the runway, as I said. And then it was Alpha Company. By the way, my tent, as I said in one of my letters, is located right at the end of the golf course. And at first, this is kind of hard because all these aircraft take over, and sometimes they're not more than 10 or 15 feet above my tent, and they make a hell of a lot of noise. But you get used to it, really. And even though it'll shatter the tent and it'll make everything jump, and the sides will flip and flap when these damn things go over, you really don't notice it. Or you sleep through it because you're going, so damn tired. Anyway, once I got here, I got to the Alpha Company and I came here, and everybody's great. I'm living now in the Continental Palace. That's what it's called. It's one of the bigger tents around. They improved it, and just yesterday we improved it so much as to put running water in it.
Okay, now, this
hell of a lot, really. Because, sometimes you land and, I never was fired at. This one I'm driving at. And I wasn't fired at yet. But, there might be a time, like, where are we supposed to go tomorrow? And it's supposed to be a hot area. Other things that we do around here are, like, the courier and everything. Today, it took about 8 hours. Four hours in the afternoon. And we went from here to Plaikou, from Plaikou to Kantum, and from Kantum to Danak, and Danak back here. It takes a while. And the guy who flew it today is an old timer, and he really put me through the course. And I had to navigate, and I had to make all the radio calls and do all the crap. And it was very interesting and instructive. There also is, then you have your logistics run. These things consist of taking food out, water out, medical supplies, boots, and fatigues, and troops out in the field. Or another type of thing that we do around here is the standby business. They'll put us on a 30-minute standby, and this means that we have to react within 30 minutes. We have to be airborne. Now, this is bad. Last night we were on a 5-minute standby, which means we had to sleep in our helicopters right out in the field. It was 100 yards away from my tent, but still we had to sleep in the old helicopter. And about 8 o'clock we got the word to go, so we jumped in the old helicopter. We went out and picked up some chips and took them out to a landing zone. And we made about 19 sorties, which is 19 ships full. So we were flying in a 6-ship formation, so we did it 3 times. And it was interesting. You certainly learn how to fly the helicopter here, and you learn how to do everything else. When we go to the field tomorrow, at least I'll be prepared, not like the last time I was out there, and I went with only an overnight's belonging, only stayed for 6 days. Tomorrow I'll take a couple sets, but it'll be difficult because we may not have a place to shower and shave again. But anyway, I see now that my teeth is running out, and I might as well give my love to the family, and Frank, I appreciated your letter. It came in yesterday. It was real nice, and Mom, thanks for your letter, thanks for selling the car for me, and also to Larry, and everybody else on the horn. Don't want to ride, it's nice to receive.
Okay, dear Frank and Mom and Larry and Rich and everybody. This is, I had a little trouble with this reel right here. This is the second time I'm recording on this phase. I recorded both sides, but I didn't play it back immediately like I usually do. And as a result, I just screwed up someplace. I don't know where, but, here goes anyway. But the, recordings. I got your recording when I was down in Tuiwa. And I really appreciate it, although I had to borrow a friend's tape recorder because I didn't have mine with me at the time. And even if I had it, my weak batteries were of such a nature that that's probably why the bad recording that you got, not bad, but weak. I think this one should be just a little bit better. My tape recorder is, the world's all-time cheapy. I got it quite inexpensively, $8 plus 22 rolls of, tape. And so, I can't complain, really, but I only have one speed, and that's the speed it's playing at now. It should be playing much better, because I do have, new batteries. Your tape came in kind of, it was distorted, high. Evidently mine ran a little bit faster than yours did, so your voice came in a little bit high. It was evenly high, however, all the way through. When I played it on my friend's tape recorder back at Tuiwa, it came out high in the beginning, and it mellowed out, and it stayed, stayed natural, from the center of it to the end. I don't know what you can do about this. You might, try something. Maybe try your wall inside again or something. Or if it comes back in, it's fine. I'll have to play on my buddy's tape recorder. About the incident at Tuiwa. It's pronounced Tuiwa, not Tuihoa. Tuihoa, or whatever you should pronounce it. I don't know. We were there. It happened about a mile from where my tent was located. It was an element of the first cab. A few two airplanes just collided in midair. It was pilot error on both parts. They received no enemy fire or anything like this to cause evasive actions. Guys just had their head up and locked, and they just ran into each other, which is bad. Whenever you hear of any of the activity of the first cab, if you hear them down in Tuiwa, real first-class soldiers, more or less. So we came down, and it was pretty fierce fighting. The second day we were there, they had a battle that took about 6 pilots from our battalion. It was really, real bad. We landed on this one mop, and it was a real big gaggle. And they prepped this mountain by artillery and gunships and tank gear, you know, and then they landed, and boy, they just gave them hell. They were still down there dug in. And as a result, like I said, 6 got killed. A real good friend of mine from the unit got shot right in the butt. There's a slit in the seat, you know, the armor-plated seat, where the seatbelt goes through. And this bullet came right to that quarter-minute slit and got him and really tore up his inside. It's kind of a shame. There's,
I was unfortunate in this thing. All this activity, see, they went to this, made this combat assault, and from one small section, 11 ships got hit, something like that. And I was unlucky because the gaggle I was in was about 500 meters south of where all this activity took place. So, I got out, you know, real great, no problems at all. It was a bad day all the way around.
All the way around, but after the first few days, which were by far the worst, and some of the worst times this company has ever gotten into, it kind of simmered down to a loud roar. You know, it's a funny thing. Every Sunday, you can just bet your bottom dollar on it, is the most hectic day around here. Usually, we'll get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and have combat assault all day long, and it's really amazing. It's just like clockwork every Sunday. Saturdays are not really bad, and Fridays aren't bad, but Sundays are okay. To give you an example about them throwing us all over the countryside, tomorrow we're going to go to Pleiku, actually the first platoon of our company. We're going to take over a slot from the 227th Helicopter Assault Battalion, and we're going to go on to fulfill their role. They're supporting the first of the 7th, I think it is, or 2nd of the 7th. This is a grunt unit. And I think their main mission is to guard the roads outside of Pleiku, from Pleiku back John Key and up and around that area, I don't know. And I'll have a section out there. That should be interesting. They're saying they're getting a lot of flying time. But, well, we'll see. Speaking about flying time, I got, since I was here, in excess of 150 hours so far. This is a lot of time in the OC, just considering how long I've been here. The most I've ever flown in one day is, this is that one day I flew 10 hours and 30 minutes. In the last 6 hours of which we didn't even get our butts out of the cockpit. This, that's a lot of time. You know, we can't even, well, we could have, we really wanted to, but usually when we refuel, we don't even stop the aircraft engine. We just sit there and just set it on the ground, and they shoot the old juice, and we go, you know. Sometimes we can get out, but it just takes, it's such a, just 3-minute operation, and all the trouble it takes to get out of that armor-plated seat, it's hardly worth it sometimes, only when the pain is so much that you gotta get out or die, you know. I really, you know, the experience that we're having here, I've really learned a lot about flying. From both seats now, I feel pretty capable. And, I've been in a lot of hairy situations so far. Not a real lot, but, more than I believed. Both flying and, nothing too much, you know, in the way of real hot LZs. Meaning I never took a round. We got shot at once. We were on a supply mission. Just 2 days after that big battle down in Chihuahua. And we went down, it was just turning dust. And this LZ was in the bottom of a valley. And they had just secured. It was a hot wire unit. It was a unit out of the 1st to the 7th. And we went there and we just landed. We were unloading we were just going to pick up some Viet Cong suspects. And all of a sudden, everybody outside the helicopter, we couldn't hear any rounds being fired themselves, but everybody hit the ground and they started shooting lead out of that LZ like crazy. We just pulled pitch, man. We just took off. And we called back and said, how you doing down there? You know, you got them inside? Has the fire ceased? And then they called in some artillery on these people. Evidently, a couple automatic weapons fire from the side of the mountain was aimed at us when they were quite got us. Then they called in the artillery. Then once it was relatively quiet, we just went back in there, picked up the suspects, and took out. It's really amazing. I hate to be sporadic about this stuff, but I'm saying things that are coming to my mind. I'll tell you about this gaggle we had last Sunday. I was at the end. I was tail end Charlie of a 44-ship gaggle. You know, 44-ship helicopter type operation. And we were moving a couple companies hither and yon across the landscape. And as tail end Charlie, you really, you know, it gets hectic.
right? That formation flying is one of the most difficult things in the world. And this is all we do, y'all. Everything we do is in formation. It really got hairy there that day. I made a combat assault with a load of sea rations, which is really ridiculous because you're not supposed to bring in the logistical support until the area is secure. But the unit that we're supporting, this, the 227th, doesn't run things like the 229th does. I mean, they have their head up and locked all the time, so, like, I don't know. It's not the most progressive unit in the world. My wingman came down, and he had a sling load. This is how we do things. Not really. Life here isn't really that bad. When I was in Tuiwa, I collected some beautiful waves at the beach, and my suntan is coming along beautifully. But most of the time, we're flying. And this is really the truth. I see that my super-duper reel is coming to an end, dear folks. So, I think I want to sign off. There's not too much left. You know, it's really hard on this darn thing. You can't tell when the darn thing's ready to finish. But, I hope, you know, everybody gets to hear this if you have a chance. I know when you have your days off, Mom and Larry and...
You just heard Jerry's second tape, and now I'm about to play the third tape, which I received on August 18th, on a Wednesday. And that very same morning, I'm recording it here for posterity.
Okay, today is the Sunday, the 14th of August, 1966. The time is about 18:03. It's a beautiful Sunday evening. I think we're going to have mass in about an hour, and which will be held by Edgar Methal. Well, you know, I was eager recording, but I didn't have an opportunity to listen to it. I had left my recorder back at Aunt Kay, and we took off on this new operation. So today I had a chance to run back to Aunt Kay for something on a courier flight, and so I picked it up. Where am I? Right now I'm at Pleiku, which is about 40 nautical miles to the west of Aunt Kay. Here we're on Operation Paul Revere. I really think this is the name of it, although I'm not real certain about it. The surroundings, generally, the geography around here is that we're about 1,500 feet of elevation. It's, relatively, it's higher than, on Kane. As a result, we'll all the time have, well, not the best weather in the world. We'll, in the mornings, we're usually fogged in until about 10 o'clock. And it's quite interesting. The area itself, you know, like our company area, we're situated on the turkey farm. This is right outside the MACV compound at Pleiku. MACV stands for the Material Assistance Command, Vietnam. Turkey farm is just a big flat open area where whenever they have operations, they come up and sit. I mean, we make our operations here. We set up housekeeping. And we moved out of Aunt Kay, lock, stock, and barrel, and where we get everything we got, or most of everything we got is up here. The area is, you know, this is in the monsoon season, so we have, there's a lot of mud. Believe me, there's a lot of mud. Our tent itself is in mud. And we dug this. The first night we were here, we only had one tent over this thing. And this created a hardship because that tent leaked, like I said, it was like a screen, you know? It just retarded. The raindrops wouldn't hit us directly. They'd kind of drip on us slowly.
Well, we gotta abide by the general's wishes.
American life, and even more costly, when it came down to Viet Cong, I think 5,000 were killed in that battle. Well, working around the Chupong Mountain, which is a large mountain range which borders the, you know, the border of Cambodia and Vietnam, the weather, as I said, plays heavily, you know, in favor of the Cong in this part. We can count on low clouds and poor visibility and rain almost any time.
for his entire section, but he'll take command from the Gecko leader. And I'm responsible for my entire section. And this is a hell of a lot of responsibility. You got a lot of grunts aboard, and you got a lot of crew aboard, and a lot of aircraft, and that's alright. Because I'm getting my views upon whether I'm, what I think my purpose is here in Vietnam, etc. I think I'm going to wait on this, because I can only say what I said before. I want to see more and experience more before I put out an official word. It looks like this picture, if this guy from the plane theater comes through, looks like that picture taking bit might be all completed. I think I'm running out of film, sportsman, so, give my love to all, and tell Larry to send me some, good reading material, like I asked him.
I'm now about to record Jerry's fourth tape, which I received on August 20th.
Okay, come on.
I'm about to record Jerry's fifth tape, which I received in early September. Difficult to make everything out, but I'll try to improve the quality of the recording as I'm putting it on this master reel.
Good afternoon. Today is Saturday,
3rd of September. I'm presently having a slight monsoon time, and everybody went to the Miss Hall, so I thought it was a very apropos time to make a recording. We're having it now, first of all. We're having it raining like hell. We should stop for a second. I should be back to the Miss Hall, but that's much. On the question of clarity, I'm getting it in your tapes with more and more clarity. I can make you out very well. On the next question of cameras, understood that you're very interested in the Konica. I took down all the facts and figures on that, but I question you on this Tika business, if you can inform me a little bit more on it. Well, anyway, I'll tell you what happened since the last recording. I remember we were still on Paul Revere II. That operation is officially closed, and we all came back more or less to garrison. This means we're taking on cages milling around the area. And it's real nice. It really is. Seems like a big city because we got our nice big tent with wooden floors, etc. Actually, I could have had this recording out a couple days sooner, but all day long, usually, we'd be working to fix up. Well, first day we were back, we worked the whole blasted day on fixing up our own hooch. We made a beautiful little bar out of bamboo, etc. And I have to get a picture of it. It's real nice. We had these empty casings from the machine gun with 50 caliber. And this is in swarms hanging all over. And then a big sign saying a Continental Palace with a picture of Ho Chi Minh on the side. Actually, they were Playmate of the Month all over around the sides then. However, but the other 2 days past that were spent in laying concrete pads for our permanent hooch. And this is really a lot of work, considering that we haul all the sand and the gravel and the concrete in by ourselves. We have to lay the form and level the form by ourselves. And this is, it's really a lot of work. Today went much better than the other days because we laid about a 12 by 32 slab of concrete about 6 inches deep in an hour and a half. We poured it out. We had the entire company of officers lending support, whereas yesterday we weren't that fortunate. We had to lay forms, etc. Anyway, it's improving because once we get the concrete forms laid, we'll be able to hit the engineers for some lumber and possibly start building a real permanent house. Also, 2 days ago, I'm here to lay this greatest news flash there is. I went out to, as best officer, I'm best officer for a great company. I went out to see if I could scrounge some Class A's up. I wanted to go down to Quinon, which is about 40 minutes flight right on the coast, and see if I could get anybody with A rations, which are real good stuff, as opposed to B rations, which is canned slop, So I was going to go down there. My buddy, who was an IBM instructor pilot, he got out of school about a month before me, but he worked for this designation. And he said, well, on the way, right before I dropped you off, we got to shoot a little auto rotation. Just cutting the engine off and gliding to the earth. So we proceeded to the auto rotation place where we go, which is a special forces camp about midway between Motor Day Sings. We hit there around 10 o'clock in the morning. We offloaded a crew and took off all the machine guns and started to do these auto rotations. So anyway, we started out with a hovering auto rotation. He did one, and I did one. He did one, and I did one. This went on for about 9 times. We tried various kinds. We tried regular hovering auto rotation, which is one spot, about 4 feet up on the ground. You cut the engine, and it falls to ground, and you make it land real soft. And we tried one where
268 feet of tape on September 15th, 1966. I'm about to record Jerry's sixth tape, which I received from Vietnam today. He mailed it, well, we'll see. He'll tell us in the tape, I presume.
Hey, good evening. It's the old Jerry again, and it's now approximately 2200 hours on the 10th of September, 1966. I was just listening to your last tape, and it was doing good, you know. About the cigars, buddy, they're really great, no kidding. They got in even fine condition. But like I said before, I don't know if I got in my last tape or not, I don't think so, but, you know, the sawdust that you packed them in, it's great for keeping them intact, but the containers, the plastic things, are not sawdust-proof, and as a result, before smoking any of my super-duper cigars, I have to blow the things off, get all the sawdust off them, you know? And, I'll tell you why I like them, you know, they last long, they taste good, and chew them for a long time. It's real sweet tobacco. Once you get past it, you know, 5 minutes or 2 minutes when you get bad on the cigar. But when you get past that, man, it's odd. It's golden. Concerning the shades, Mom wrote me about how you came in one day and saw the shades, and she was quite pleased. And it's good. It's something that
Jerry's 7th tape, which I'm receiving on September 27th from Vietnam.
Hey, Frank. Today is about the 22nd of September. The 21st is fine, anyway. It's approximately 1,500 hours. When I got your super tape last time, I kind of tickled you to see all the questions you had about the border check. I did evidently not explain myself fully. For
toward this operation. Anyway, I was coming over. It was midnight. Kind of crappy weather, not the world's best. And I flew generally in this direction. And a ship was going to take off from this locality, which is called Lane Field. And he was going to come up and meet me. So I said, this is fine. This is wonderful. So we rendezvoused this guy. He caught me and he says, okay, you want to show me him? Because this place is surrounded by mountains. There's mountains every place. Just in the center of them. Now, it's kind of treacherous at night. I run into a couple mountains. It ruined my entire day. But anyway, he came up, grabbed me. You know, and we rendezvoused. We started coming back. And he was making approach to what he thought was Lane Field. And all of a sudden, we see tracers come at us. You know, like machine gun tracers. As I said, they were machine gun tracers. So naturally, this kind of terrified me because there's always a saying that tracers are bad any time of day, but at night, you know, they really look worse because you're going, you're picturing yourself, you're flying in total blackness. You can't even see a horizon. And then all of a sudden, you see these tracers coming at you. And, well, anyway, so this kind of got me shut. Because the tracers, they burn out. They have an effective burnout range of about 750 meters. And they burn out to nearly nothing. And this kind of stuff that gets you is if the tracer goes right by you, then you know he's missing you. But if it burns out way ahead, you don't know where that flaming projectile is going. So naturally, I dropped it and went straight towards the earth. And I went so low, I got bugs in the windshield from coming so low over the right then. I was just lucky that there was nothing, you know, big hills, big trees right in front of me, hard to get creamed. That was kind of a traumatic experience. Then about 3 nights later, I was at a logger area, place we wait, and we were on a ready reaction force mission, you know, in case any of the units in the area should come under attack and need reinforcements and such. We're going to have a group of helicopters and a group of infantrymen standing by so that they can come in and, you know, help out the situation. So I was in the direction. He called me up. I was the leader of the group's MAR company. And he's the lead chief. I had a major flight with him that night. And he said, okay, a mission. It's an emergency night resupply mission to a place about 20 miles away that need more ammunition, etc. So I said, oh, and we never give me a DCA radar vector there, etc. You know, that was one out of the ships that we had. We were supposed to designate them. So Major and I came back, and we were going to pick the second and third ships to do it. But, wait a minute. So I came back, and the Major figured out that there were two warrant officers in the other two ships, and he said, well, he wanted me to go along. You know, I don't know, he thought possibly I'd be good at this mission. I said, all right, I'll not do it. So I took the other ship, and we plotted it all out and all this stuff, and we went to get the Cardinal. There was so much, you know, the stars around. There was, nope, please, no, nothing. So we started out by contacting the radar vector, and I found out they were close. So that means I had to go by my time distance, but I didn't find anybody. I was in the middle of no place. So I started climbing up. I wanted to get my altitude right over the field so that I wouldn't hit any mountains between A and B, you know, the two points. And by the time I got up to my altitude, what the helicopter was, was flying. As soon as I got my altitude, he gets vertical. He said, all right, I got vertical, you know. The ship started creaking, you know, going out of control. I grabbed it, and I straightened it up, and all of a sudden, I got vertical. And he grabbed it. He said, okay, I'm better now. I grabbed it. He grabbed it, and anyway, just about this time, everything started getting misty up there, so I decided to abort the mission and come back. I later found out that the other ship, they also had similar problems, and that they had vertigo, etc. It turned out to be a pretty hairy night, because I decided to abort the mission, because, now we were having so much trouble.
So he aborted the mission, and, the tape aborted, too. I mean, that was the end of the tape. And so, here I am on the 10th of October, and I'm recording his 8th tape, which I received this morning. It's high noon in the parish of St. Clair, and the feast of St. Francis Borgia, and I'm about to record this new tape, which I just received from Jerry. I believe the tape is one that he did using the sound system of the helicopter. And it sounds to me like he's giving orders back and forth between the tower and the copter. So.
Okay, now this is a recording. We're going to try to record a recording pretty quick. And our element here is we're supposed to pick up three, four up here this morning. We have an XL on three elements. XR is our company, and the CA is being led by Clipper, who is the other FDF company. Foxtrot is the current ship. That's the Foxtrot, too.
Off at 2-5. 3-6-3,
we're just going to 3-2. Flight 10-4 is the side of the
infrared.
We've been told that, so that's off.
Here we go. Told me that we were taking a couple rounds, so
today, November 4th, 1966, is the feast of St. Charles Borromeo, and also the beginning of our 40 hours, because it's also First Friday. In today's mail, I received the 9th tape from Jerry, and I'm going to play that for you now. He mailed it some time ago. I can't see the date on it.
Which is about 10 miles to the west of Quinine, right on the coast. The place called
That was the end of Jerry's ninth tape, which he recorded in Vietnam on October 29th, 1966, on the Saturday. And I got it on the following Friday. So in 6 days. That's good service, huh? This is Jerry's 10th tape, which I received on December 2nd, and which I'm going to record now.
Okay, today is the third of November, or the day before Thanksgiving, whatever it is. I believe it's a Wednesday. Happy Thanksgiving. Sorry, I haven't communicated in so long, but, well, you know how it is. Sometimes it gets difficult. Among the daily harassing routine, just one little conflict. I got your package, and thank you very much. Although I would have much preferred to see some good cigars, but I appreciate the film anyway. This may seem a little stranger than the other recordings because I'm using somebody else's tape recorder. Mine is getting very temperamental. Maybe it's just age just getting up on it, but it isn't functioning quite well. I'm going to take it apart tomorrow or tonight whenever I get some good light and see if I can make it run again. If I can't, I'll buy a new one. I can't forget it. As you know, I finally did return from my R&R, and I had an outstanding time. I'll give you a rundown of it. I found out, I was reading about Da Nang, and I thought, it sounded like a nice place to go. I spoke to some people who went there, and they spoke very highly of it.
Today is the 3rd of January, 1967, and on the 31st of December, New Year's Eve, I received two tapes from Jerry, which make his 11th and 12th tape, and I will play these for you now.
Hello to the wonderful land of Cleveland. This is your favorite war correspondent out here in Vietnam on 19 December 1966. Remember, fans, that you only have 6 more shopping days until Christmas. How you doing? I'm sorry for my, it seems like it's taking me a long time to get my tapes together, and, there really is just cause. We've been pretty busy. I've received, 3 of Mom's packages. I received, yours, your film, and I've received Richard's, package of film to me. It's all very nice, and I appreciate it very much. I'm going to first, answer 10 of your questions, and I'll tell you the latest of the greatest war experiences. First, you mentioned about that iron you're very fortunate, really, that's all it boils down to, you can get another R&R. I'll try. However, if I don't get an R&R, I'm going to try to use up some of my leave getting to places that I'll never really have another chance to get to, like Hong Kong or Tokyo or Bangkok, actually any place. I might even go back to Penang, although I wouldn't want to, but I'd still go back there for the sake of, just getting a little bit of travel time in the far west, far east, would you believe? Frank, I'm going to enclose in this, in the package, a couple advertisements that I got out of Playboy about the Akai. I don't know, maybe I was wrong. Maybe the Akai and the Roberts aren't, in fact, the same recorder. I didn't think they were advertising in the United States under the name of Akai. However, until I saw this Playboy ad, you know? And, in particular, I'd like you to pay attention to the 355 ad, and just tell me what you think of it. If you don't think the Akai is good, give me another Japanese brand that you feel would be a good deal to get. And, I mean, include the specific details, as I'm sure you will. Insofar as those movies are concerned, as soon as I determine whether that camera of mine is really working, you know, the one, the Keystone, that Rich sent me, I'll take more pictures, and I'll heed your suggestions. They sound pretty worthwhile. But if it doesn't work, I was considering buying a Yashica. Yashica Super 8 50, Super 8 50, however name it is, something like that. I believe I can get it for about $69. It has a lot of good features, and if you could, why don't you look into it, see what the consumer report's saying about it. And tell me the next day, because I think I can still get it at one of the neighborhood theaters. I really like the idea of getting a Super 8, because of its ease of loading. You know, you won't spoil the film when you're turning it over, or at least you shouldn't. And, I can see the disadvantage of having to buy a new projector, but I've seen a couple advertised by Kodak and by some Japanese brand that offer both the regular 8 and Super 8. You know, you can show the same films on the same projector. And, I realize that I'd have to buy a projector in order for everybody to see the films, but, it'll be worth it. I don't know. Well, give me your opinion on it. Insofar as this girl ran money to that sister, Agnes Claire, refers to me. I mean, she told her right. She seems like a real nice girl. Her name is Pat Popovich. She lives out in Euclid someplace, probably right out in the area. She writes very nice letters. And, I'd like to know what she looks like. I'd like to... I think we've got to do, Frank. You ought to call sister Agnes Claire and try to check her out. See what the word is, you know? I mean... I wonder if I'm so fortunate, you know, to have something that... Well, anyway, I hope you know what I mean. I hope you'll check her out. I'm thinking about Sister Agnes Claire. She sent me a very good article. The title of it now, kind of evades my mind, but it was published originally in American. She retyped it. It was a matter of four or five pages of typing, and she really put a lot of effort in it. But it was worthwhile, and took me a while to plow through it, because I've grown out of the habit of getting through such material. But once I did, I found it particularly rewarding. And I think I'll read it again. Okay, to continue. I shall, as I said on the other side, reread what Sister Agnes Claire has sent me. It's an article of words, shall we say. Referring to your question about whether or not I flew to the troops on Thanksgiving Day and delivered them their Thanksgiving dinners, well, I didn't. I was really too busy in the mess hall, and the company mess hall, being the good old mess officer, trying to get things squared away. I don't know if I went into in-depth. I probably hadn't. This would be a good time, too. I'll go into what we had for Thanksgiving. It was really one of the finest things I've done, you know, considering the time and the circumstance. We made a special arrangement of the tables in our mess hall. See, we have a GP large tent at our mess hall. At least we had it at the Crystal. And a GP large tent is about 20, maybe by 60 or 65 or 70, something like that. It's a pretty large tent. Anyway, I made the tables in the shape of a U, you know, a large U, and with the base of the U serving, to hold the majors. And we had a visiting battalion commander, two colonels. We had two colonels and about three majors sitting at the head table. And around that, I put the rest of the company sitting on both sides of the U, you know. And we only have paper plates, you know, plastic forks and spoons, but I put it out to my men to that we should set individual plates. And put it on napkins, and we had a pamphlet out from the Met V, or John Westmoreland's, saying, giving his regards on Thanksgiving Day, so I put that on an eighth table, on an eighth plate. And on top of the plate, I had the Christmas menu I specified for the entire Vietnam.
12th tape, which was sent on the same day, but which I'm recording on January 4th, 1967.
Okay, to continue, this is still 19 December 1966, six more days till, six more shopping days till Christmas. If you haven't played the other tape, I'll be getting both these tapes at the same time, because I'm a cinema at the same time. If you haven't played the other tape, play that one first. You have to play that one, then turn to this one. Okay, to continue on with the story, he got sent to, on the train where he's resting and recuperating and coming along in fine spirits. Since we got here, oh, to give you an exact spot where we are, Hammond is the base, is the forward CP of the 1st Cavalry Division while they're out in the field on this operation. It's located about 40 miles north west of Quinlan, which is right, which is a seaport city of the Central Highlands. And you take out your trusty dusty world atlas that Larry has, no doubt, or World Book Encyclopedia, you can see where we're located at. We're right next to the Phuket Mountains. Phuket Mountains I'm looking at this time. It's a beautiful mountain chain. A little fast story about this mountain chain. In the center of it, you know, to show how impregnable it was, or how little people went up into it, the Viet Cong had a prison camp. A POW camp. And when one operation, the ROKs, the Royal Republic of Korea Army, were running through the mountains, they decided to make a big clean sweep of it. They found this concentration camp. And it held true to all the atrocities of the Germans, etc., that they committed in their concentration camps during the Second World War. Okay, continue. Since we're here at Hammond, it's a more secure area. It's a large, it's probably about 10 blocks big. You know, we had a big 130 strip here. And this is where the logistics center, most of the aviation helicopter companies are located here. But since we've been here, we've been getting these night missions, and this is really the war story for the week for sports fans back home. It started off, our old company commander, well, I'll get to this a little bit later on. Anyway, Colonel Jackson was the company commander. He used to be a major, but he just got a promotion. Anyway, this one combat assault we're going to make about 5 miles directly west of our location. To a village there, intelligence reports brought up the fact that the VC would run out of the village during the day and go up into the mountains. At night, they would come back into the village and back to their women and do their mission for us. Once they got the word of this, during the brigade commanders, they had this green night combat assault plan. We cranked at 0340 in the morning and lift our ships up off our hacksaw pad and come on the runway where the troops were waiting. And we put them in single file. We had two ships, ours 03, the second section leader. And we took off and we made an encircling. Basically, it was a plan to capture all of AC. We were going to surround this entire village. The ships took off at about 4 second interval. We picked up and followed the leader, which was Major Jack, Colonel Jackson, excuse me. And he went out and found the spot, the exact spot where his aircraft was to land. When he gave the command, all these aircraft, which were 10 in a line, approximately 100 yards between aircraft because of this 4 second separation, they all landed at the same time and discharged their troops. We carried 7 combat ready, soldiers. And then we did this 4 times, make a complete box. And we loaded off about 270 troops, or 240, something like that. And it really was a good idea. It was smooth, and it was real well, up until the third move when the illumination as supplied by the artillery, they were dropping illuminating rounds, was off for a while, and Colonel Jackson started to let down, and he said, okay, don't beat my approach. So everybody was supposed to start their approach, and I was about 10 feet off the ground, and he said, okay, I'm continuing, and I was ready to lay off the troops, and he said, okay, I'm beginning my approach again, because he had gotten messed up because the artillery was in the wrong spot. So we picked up and had to go around, and some ships discharged their cargo. But it was later found out that we went around, made a big circle and came back in and unloaded our cargo. But the people that discharged our cargo that first time, later found out that it was alright, they put them in the right spot anyway. The exact results of the thing I'm not sure of, but we did capture a bunch. It was a pretty wild kind of thing, starting so early in the morning, it was pitch black, it was raining, and there was fog out there. Not a real lot of fog, but just enough to bother you. But it was an interesting sort of arrangement. Okay, so I continue. How was the first time? This is on the night of 6 December. About 3 days later, on the 9th of December, I was on the radio reaction force. I don't know, 20 miles, and I think I was 20 miles. And I was a little bit of a
This is Jerry's 13th tape, which I received on January 18th, 1967, and I'm recording here for you on January 18th.
Okay. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. Greetings once again from Vietnam. I just received your tape today, and I think I want to try to get it off and back to you at record time. I appreciate it very much, your Christmas greetings, yours and mine's, along with Savasco's and and your two, political friends. It was very nice. And your singing. Although it didn't turn out
Jerry's 14th tape, which I received on the morning of February 1st. It's a Wednesday.
Greetings from Vietnam. Today is the, I think it's Tuesday, 24th of January, 1967. Again, we are still located at LB Hammond, still in the Bayer campaign, or operation, whatever you call it. Today is my day off. I received your tape today, and as in my former style, I'm going to try to return it the same day. Now, let me clarify something. On the thing about L.D. Bird, it was a matter of shooting 200 point-blank rounds into their position, into the oncoming foe directly. Like I noted on the article which I sent back, it was two point-blank rounds, but 198 to the retreating path of the enemy. And the 54 casualties were caused by these two point-blank rounds. And the rest, which would later turn out, I don't know what I mentioned last time, but I think it's somehow 300 or 400, were found in the hills, that's the result of these 198 other rounds from this one place. Okay, now that should clear that up. I'd like to make a point. Did I mention my last thing about, that night extraction we had about 2 days after Bird? If I did, tell me. If I didn't, I don't tell you again. It was something I wanted to, tell you about. Since then, we really haven't had too many new and outstanding, hairy things like that. We've continued to have the same bad weather. We've started to progress farther north than we had originally been. And as a result, we're running into more and more contact. Which means every time we go into, when we go up north, we'll be going into these places and the LZs get hotter. People start shooting at us. Seems like every time we go past this one river, Bongsaw, they take a couple rounds. Alright, that's that. We're gonna, one thing I did do recently was go to Vung Tau to pick up an aircraft. Vung Tau is located down, near Saigon, probably about 70 miles, 50 miles east of Saigon. And an aircraft had to be picked up, and, checked out and test flown and all this stuff. And also, we had to do some scrounging. So me and a spy officer and a spy sergeant went. I was going to scrounge for a mess hall. They were going to scrounge for the company in general. We went down there, and we did a caribou out of Anke and flew Phantiet. And, it was just like a different world. Here, it was cold, windy, and rain, in the middle of the monsoons. And we got off the plane there, and his rain jacket on. It was warm. It was just like, paradise, cool breeze coming, no clouds in the sky. Beautiful. Just difference between day and night. Flat.
So the aircraft appeared in such fine shape that we just signed for it and took it, you know. But still, we had a secondary mission to be down there and to scrounge up the different things we needed for the company, me for the mess hall, and, yeah, you know, for the rest of the company. So the sergeant went off his own way to go and get all the things he needed. You know, talk people out of them, that's what I mean by scrounging, I'm sure you know what I mean. And I went with his lieutenant. So we went, first of all, to the depot. And our company has no account there in the depot. So I went up to him, to this guy, a new actual lieutenant. It's always the worst to deal with officers because they follow the book. And deal with an NCO, you can, you know, give him a bottle of booze or one of my war souvenirs I got him. And these guys will give you anything. So I was up there, and I see it's a second lieutenant who's running the show, and I said, oh, no. So I walked in there, and I started talking to him. And I told him we just moved into the area, and that we're setting up, and we need these different things. So what it turned out was that I tried to get all these things, and he looked up in his little stock records after he believed that I was getting into the area, and he found that he didn't have them. And this disturbed me very greatly, because if anybody's going to have anything, he will. He's got such a big depot, you know. So I said, well and good, you know, but I went outside anyway. He did give me permission to go into the expendables store, and I went there, and I talked to the sergeant. He gave me a whole bunch of junk from my mess hall. But I walked into the warehouse where this guy, this lieutenant, was drawing from, and they were so screwed up there. I went there, and I see all the stuff I needed. Not all of it, but like fire units from my mess hall. you know, I can compare things with, you know, price-wise, and see how good of a deal I'm getting. And, well, I hope I will. I'll look at those things, and I'll try to get the best deal naturally. So, it should work out, even though, well, this, by the way, is a new recorder that I just bought from this kid. It isn't a new one I bought secondhand from this guy, because mine just stopped working, though, the original one I bought. And let me know how it sounds, how everything's coming out on it. I tried it once before on the deck, and you seem to think it was good.
Today is February 27th at 10 minutes to 12. I'm about to record Jerry's 15th tape, which I received on February 24th.
Robinson's place, it's on the ground floor. All I have to do is go in there and ask for white, clear,
Lucille, February 27th, 10 minutes to 1, and I'm recording Jerry's 16th tape, which I also received today.
Okay, greetings. Uncle Jerry from the land of the Big Rice Paddy. Vietnam, 1967, the 20th day of February. I think I'd like at this time to continue with the report I was making last time on Taipei. I hurriedly went through a couple of the notes I had jotted down. As I recall, I was saying last about the nightlife. The nightlife was something in life that you've never really seen. As I said before, it was like one of these Fred Astaire movies with a band that rolled on the stage, etc. Well, really what? When I came in, I came into the potato cover charge. Just walk in. And a great round hall. It really looks like a nightclub. You know, you have a really low deck. You have a little bit, then you have the first floor, really. And then you have a balcony. And surrounding the balcony are lights. And there's stairs going from the main stage to the balcony, which also has lights. These stairs, you know. But then you have a rather formal stage. And after the formal, lifted stage, you know, 4 feet off the ground. The show begins by the master of ceremony, which in this case is a lovely woman, come out to the stage and introduce the first act. Well, he didn't really come out to the stage. He did over the PA system. In the first act, what do you want? Beautiful, or, you know, singing, I don't know what word, probably Chinese, Taiwanese, singing, for real, you know, even though we couldn't understand it, it was just beautiful, the way she was singing it. She was beautiful, and her costume was gorgeous. Then another woman came out, just as soon as this one received her applause, she was a real good bear, a deep-voiced woman, you know, this girl came out, who was an outstanding soprano. And then we had this male singer. He sounded like, this guy's name is San Francisco. What's his name? Oh, maybe Matt Monroe or somebody like this. He sounded very American, and he sang American. Now, there's an Oriental guy. But these are all professional figures. You can see the professionalism about them. And he finished the song, and I believe a third woman came out. Then they had a mother, daughter, and father team. Father did magic, and the mother and daughter did, acrobatics, and they balanced on each other. It was really weird, you know, you can see all this stuff on television, then you go and see it in the real life, you see this mother, and this daughter balancing, you know, just hit the head on top of the mother, and no hands, they go up the stepladder, and down the other side, and it gets breathtaking just to sit there, and, watch this, you know, you're holding your breath, and you're grasping the head of the chair, etc. After this came, then you came their four dancers. They have a choreography was really great. A dancing troupe, you know, they just went about just like I said on these old time movies. They came down the balcony, and the lights were playing, and they were dancing all over the floor. And just a regular dance number, like you see on that show, but. And then he danced out on this bottom deck, right in front of the people. And the floor went down within it, you know, around.
Solo singers. Now, it rolled out as the number started, which was a real nice impression. A lot of brass in the band, just a good Jimmy Dorsey song.
or such things. And we saw the first act, and we were compelled to stay. Really? I said, oh, I'll answer a couple questions you had in your last letter.
Fucking heck with me, huh? I just had a mind for crap, forget it.
Anyway, so I came back and I went to the eye doctor. You know, once I got back, I offered chemo. And then I went to, Quinon, where asbestos was. And it was, again, at that time that I'd have to wear glasses. It's a curious thing.
This is Jerry's 17th tape, which I received on March 15th, and it's now 11 o'clock, and I'm recording it on the master tape.
Good afternoon. The eighth day of March, I believe it's a Wednesday, 1967. I've been commenting about the quality of the tape with that super junky recorder for your junky little tape recorder, and it comes out much clearer, and I can understand you at least 100% better. I don't know if you could do that in the future. You know, use a junky one. I think we'll be in better shape. I had an old plan that for this
This is Jerry's 18th tape, which I received on April 5th. I'm recording it now at just beyond 700 feet.
Dear Frank.
Well, the finding is now the 28th day of... or 29th day of March, 1967. About 1340 hours. Well, sorry I made a recording earlier than this, but we've been kind of busy. We had a lot of renewed activity up here in the Canada area of operations. And for one time, they were in contact, 5 days in a row. They're still in contact.
is Jerry's 19th tape, which I'm recording on April 6th in the afternoon.
The old man took sick, and he's still back on K.
April 19th, and I've received a tape from Jerry. It's his 20th tape. And it begins about 7:64 on the Ewer counter. Here it is.
Good afternoon. Jerry, land of Vietnam. I just got your tape yesterday, and, you have to excuse that I, don't end my tape. But I sometimes try to say as much as I can. And if I don't, get it in, well, I try to get it on the next tape. As I was saying, after we landed out there, in the middle of no place, and, shut down, and I called the battalion, and I called the battalion I was sporting for, and I said, hey, I just, crashed out here. Why don't you send somebody to, secure my position? And, as I said before, within a very short period of time, they got about 50 people together, threw them on a Chinook, which is CH-47, a tandem rotor, real large cargo carrying helicopter. And this guy came barreling in there and stood the thing up in his tail, a real, real quick landing, difficult. And by the time he had his back wheels on the ground, the back door was open and the grunts were running out. And it was real dramatic. It was so dramatic, and oh wait, I must say that the downdraft from one of these Chinooks is really, really tremendous. Matter of fact, we got two tandem rotors, and it develops about 100 miles an hour downdraft underneath the downwash, the rotor wash. And the result of this real hairy landing, plus the downwash, the door on the right, on the other side of the pilot's side was open when he landed right next to it. The downdraft took the door and ripped it right off the fuselage, which
Wednesday, May 3rd, at 9:17 in the morning, and I have received and am about to record Jerry's 21st tape from Vietnam.
Thank you.
anniversary of my ordination, and also the day on which I received this 22nd tape from Jerry, along with a little note pointing out that he received the flying award of a Distinguished Flying Cross for his heroism in action. This starts on the 8:25. That's the footage.
Greetings, Brother Frank. I understand Vietnam. I think this will be my last tape. Things have been going pretty well here. They've been going very slow now that I have 11 days and a wake-up. I think that's the official count at this time. It's the 11th, I think, or 11th or 12th of May. My DROS is scheduled for the 25th. But the way it looks now, the availability of aircraft, essentially going back to the United States, it seems as though I may have to wait 2 extra days, which means that I'll leave Vietnam on the 27th. We've been back. The company's been catching up on their awards and decoration ceremony. About 2 weeks ago, I got awarded my initial air medal. Now, an air medal was gotten by how many hours you fly. For 50 CA hours, which is combat assault hours, that's when you initially land, I'm sure you know what I mean, you get one air medal. Or for 100 direct combat support, which is all the other missions which are not directly, not a combat assault. So we have CA and BCS. And I got awarded my first, my initial basic air medal. And counting up all the other hours I've gotten here, it looks like I'll have 29 Oak Leaf clusters, which means 29 air medals. I think it wears 25. I mean, they'll give you a bronze, little bitty bronze thing that shows you have 5 clusters. And you can only put 4 of these or 5 of these on the basic air medal, so you only got 25 Oak Leaf clusters, and the rest, well, you just
Chicago or to Puerto Rico, which I'll be played by you once I get home. As for discussion on that, I'm taking pictures already. I'm listening to the services of one of my friends here on the platoon, and he needs to shoot up a whole roll, and I went through some of the guy's stuff and got a couple pictures of me, all 35 millimeter color slides. And I think I got, he took a couple of pictures today during the formation. I was thinking, what is it, the DFC, and I also got another kid to take my picture with a movie camera, nice close up. Should be real interesting. And that's the happy sound of helicopters again. I think I'm just about hanging it up. They're flying me less and less. And actually, as of now, I don't think I'll fly anymore, unless a tactical emergency comes, and I certainly hope it won't. Matter of fact, I'll try to evade the area. I'm going to go to Quinon, I think, Monday, and just hide out there for a while, and come back after a while, and turn in all my equipment, and, it'll be good. To occupy my time here these last couple of days, when I haven't been flying, myself and Glenn Granberry, another short-timer, have
cigarra, su cachluza od filara. A es de garco se slow, luza negro y no slow. Nie ustawą dali ci mi wągla kapą i badali, że to mus, tych do przodka szlęka niósł. Tej roboty, aż ci na mnie wyszły poty. Józek, szlech, to człowiek są, a tam znowu ze mnie pią. Doświadczony, rąbia wągla całe tony, lecz choć mi przybyło lot, posz pasować zawsze grot. Rzeczy na ścianie, 200% planie, ale w kącie nie chcę stać, jak muzyka zacznie grać.
Królewską Polkę wykonała orkiestra Stasia Jaworskiego.
Oto idzie pierwsza fala.